And good morning to you. Hello, hello, Natasha Mitchell. Joining you across the nation on ABC RN for Life Matters. Today you are going to meet the Shedders, or one of them. A group of couples with a vision for how they want to live. And they've taken action to make it happen. They are rewriting the retirement manual, is how they describe it. You'll also meet a man who's put together some striking research under the rather loving heading of NANA, which in this case stands for New Architecture for the New Aged. But who are the New Aged? And what is the New Architecture? Yesterday, we're looking at how you want to live. And I know this is of big interest to so many of you, especially in the last half, third, quarter of your life. How do you want to live? Think about it. Retirement villages, residential aged care, a nursing home, a bungalow out the back of your kid's place, or a small unit if you've decided to downsize. Now, these options might suit you, but what if they don't? What are your plans so far? Do you often wonder why they're just aren't more creative options for living well into our old age? And what I'm asking you this morning is, what would your fantasy living arrangement look like? I want to hear from you. I want you to describe it for us. Perhaps you're already putting it in place. Maybe it's a Melrose place for the mature aged. Give us a call, 1300 22 55 76. That's 1300. Call RN. You can SMS us 0418 226 576. You can tweet us at RN Life Matters. If you're in WA, 028 333 1430. 028 333 1430. Some great comments coming in on our Facebook page. Let me just read one to get you in the mood. Simone writes, "My friends and I often joke about pooling our super and building ourselves a funky retirement village where we could pool our resources, have lots of pets, cool music on all the time, not too far from the beach or the mountains where we could be as independent or codependent as we want. Maybe a community garden and some chickens too." That's Simone's fantasy vision. Now, why joke about it? Why don't you just make it happen? That's what we're going to talk about today. Or Karen writes on our Facebook page, her vision is the best exotic marigold hotel in India. And someone's added to that, what about on the New South Wales coast? So you might have seen that film. My guests this morning, first up, our architect, Guy Luscombe. He's a director at Architects Johansson and Associates. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Natasha.
Come on, Mike, a bit. And we've got Michael Hollingworth joining us. Now, he's one of the Shedders, these three couples who are, happily, I hear, aging together in a house that they designed and own in common. It's back to the share house days. Michael, good morning to you.
Good morning, Natasha.
What do you think, both of you, about current options for so-called retirement living? Guy?
Well, I think, Natasha, you've got to ask what people want. And you can ask anyone, and if you look at the statistics, and ask people, everyone wants to stay in their own home. That's basically what it is. Overwhelmingly, people want to stay in their own home as they age, and most people still do. There's only about a 5% take-up of the 3.5 million people over 65 in Australia to retirement villages. And I think one of the reasons for that is that they don't see any other options. They'd like to move to something else. They'd like to downsize because often the homes they're living in are inappropriate. They're too large. They have steps, or they're isolated from people. So they'd want other options. But at the moment, I don't think there are that many options.
Yeah, and I'll just read Joe on our Facebook page. Emma, "In a long-awaited house renovation, my parents are incorporating things such as ramps, central heating, and a big veranda where Mum says that all her retired friends will come and enjoy while they age in place." So there you go. Michael, what about you? What do you think about the current options in Australia for so-called retirement living?
Well, I haven't looked at them a lot recently because we're already there. We've been nearly 6 years in this house that we designed and built, and I think Simone on your Facebook page described it pretty well. We pulled our super and built a funky retirement village.
You did it?
Yes, we did it.
Why do you call yourselves the Shedders?
Well, when we bought this property, which was a sort of toe in the water part of the plan. It had an industrial shed on the block, as a lot of places in the bush do. This is up about 3 hours from Sydney, and it had been set up as a house, as a lot of those same industrial sheds have been. It had a couple of bedrooms and a kitchen and so forth, so we christened the whole thing the shed, and then we shed our properties in Sydney and moved up here and, I guess, moved into the shed. We built a much bigger shed, though, I must say.
Yeah, well, a proper house. It's a share house, three couples, not everyone's fantasy vision. Because it takes them back to the old days of student grungy share houses, which were great for then.
Well, there's a bit of that in there, I suppose. But, of course, it actually has three apartments, each of which has a bedroom, an ensuite, an office and a balcony. And then a very large shared living and kitchen facilities and three garages below the house. And the said shed, which is still there as guest quarters and as a place where one of us is a long-time yoga teacher, still teaches yoga.
Oh, fantastic. I'm going to get more of a sense of the living arrangement and how you came to make it, but what was the impetus? Because this is the question I'm asking. Clearly you thought the options are really not so hot. We're going to make our own.
Yeah, we did. I guess from that point of view, two of us, the ones who were basically brought up in Australia, had parents who went into aged care, and, you know, I think they were well looked after, but it's a pretty depressing sort of place for the most part, it seemed to us. But what actually led to it was that the three couples, and we've known each other now for about 30 years, we holidayed together for several years while we were still working pretty busy in Sydney, and we enjoyed it, but they were short periods of a week or 2 weeks in January. Mm. And then somebody came up with the idea, well, what if we decided to move out of Sydney and set something up together. So we worked on that for several years, probably 4 or 5 years. We looked at it and checked it, and then we lived together. We rented a large place in Sydney and trialled it for 2 years, the six of us, and then another two
Fantastic.
Years, the four of us. So
yeah.
We tested it pretty thoroughly.
So now you've got a permanent holiday together, basically.
Fantastic. Although we're all pretty busy, I think. Often people say, well, how did we ever have time for work? But we still work. So.
Yeah, actually, that's certainly the experience of many people I know who have so-called retired. Yeah. Life just gets busier. Michael Hollingworth is with us. He's one of the so-called shedders, three couples who have decided to sort of set up their own retirement home in a big share house that they built together in New South Wales. Also joining us this morning is Guy Luscombe. He's an architect. And now, you really were the prompt for this conversation because you've just been travelling around Europe looking at fantastically interesting alternatives. To the traditional retirement village approach. What prompted you to do this as an architect?
Well, as an architect, I've been working in this area for, you know, over 10 years and, you know, have always been intrigued and interested to, as a society that's never really faced this situation where as many people as grown as old or as healthy or as wealthy or as intelligent or as, you know, self-directed as before, what that's going to look like. And as an architect, I felt that we had a responsibility or a duty to sort of frame the way that we live. And I didn't think that the profession was really doing much about that at the moment. And so that was the impetus to sort of do this study, to try and look at examples of innovative buildings for the aged overseas, primarily in Europe, because there was more variety in Europe, and I researched that and found particular buildings I thought were really quite interesting, either architecturally or from a program point of view. And so I was trying to look at common features, at innovative models, and see if I could come out as an architect with some sort of qualitative or experiential or a way of understanding this that could feed back to the profession and actually try and start the conversation about how we deal with, from a design point of view, with an ageing society. I mean, it fits into the whole age-friendly city idea that was developed by the World Health Organization. And there are a lot of people who are doing a lot of work in ageing at the moment, and I felt that the profession was really kind of a bit lagging behind.
Okay, so to the new architecture for the new age.
Yes.
Give us an example of a couple of places that you saw that really excited you. Yeah. Describe them.
Well, just to pick up on what you're saying before, and to pick up on what Michael was saying, one of the most fantastic things I saw was this building called Von Fabrik Solentiema, which is in St. Gallen in Switzerland. And it was basically started because these four women had, for years and years, had talked about setting up their own place together. And they sort of bought a block of land, but realized that the four of them couldn't afford to do that. So affordability was a big driver. So then they found, they advertised and they got 17 people. So people, some of them they knew, some they didn't know, to come into this building and they bought a fabric, an old fabric factory in quite a dense part of St. Gallen, and they created their own space. And they had no experience. They just wanted to do it. And they made these decisions along the way. They had complete control over what they were doing, and they had the freedom to make the site, the building, the loft, they're effectively loft apartments. They've got a big open space that they could do what they like with. They've got sort of a service core, which is, has all the kitchen, bathroom type things in it. Then they have a community facilities downstairs, lots of storage. They've got all got their own private gardens and a community garden. It's a and they said, look, we had no experience. And we did this.
So they became property developments, developers for themselves, built a community from scratch.
Yep.
It is a Melrose Place for the mature aged.
Yeah. And they did it themselves. And I thought, and having that control, I think, is really important. That's one of the things that I found, that people don't necessarily want to be shoehorned into something else. They actually want to have some control over what, of the way they want to live.
Well, as I expected, we've got a packed board today on Life Matters here on Friday. We're talking about, well, how you want to live as you age. Do the current mainstream options, retirement villages, residential aged care, a nursing home, now they might suit some people and they might suit you when you have very high needs, but is it the best option? And we're after your fantasy options, your creative options for living as we age. And John in New South Wales, you've got a farmer's retirement idea, hey?
Absolutely. And I must say congratulations to Guy. That sounds fabulous. And the Shedders are providing a sort of retirement compass.
So what's your idea?
Well, we were sitting having a beer, as you do, and looking out over the countryside, saying what a shame it was that more people couldn't enjoy this. And suddenly we thought, well, why couldn't we do cluster buildings on our properties and have a farmer's retirement? And that's based on the idea that it seems that people respond terribly well to animals and the country lifestyle.
Yeah, so are you actually going to put something into place, do you think, beyond an idea?
Well, I went to see the council and they got hung up immediately on the multiple occupancy difficulties. Mm. And they make a half-hearted attempt at times to protect the rural land, of course, unless they deem it open for development. In fact, the developing is leaping over the hill. The houses are coming. So we're on a bit of a floodplain, so half or so of the property disappears underwater every now and then. There's water views. But in order to protect the land, we thought, well, why couldn't you have sort of cluster townhouses or cluster buildings and still have the cattle roaming around, and the markets aren't far away, the hospital's not far away, the doctors aren't far away, and they've just built a supermarket over the hill.
So you'll set up a retirement village on your farm?
Well, on three farms, yes.
Join them up?
Yes.
Oh, I'm there. I'm so there.
Well, it just seems like such a good idea. And
yes, John...
We've got a few people on board that they're basically from the, you know, muscular dystrophy or, you know, some other retirement sort of idea people that have been living in the country and no longer can.
Okay.
And want to still associate themselves with the countryside.
But be supported. Thanks, John, for the call and the idea. And we will get to the question of councils and how they operate. We've got Helen in Balmain. Good morning to you. You're
Good
a long-term homeowner. What are you facing right now?
We're facing the future like everyone else. I'm part of quite a huge group of people in Balmain who've spent a long time in Balmain. We're in our 70s. We're still extremely active. We're active musically, as in practicing musicians and artists. Some of us are mature age. University students. We all own our own home, but we don't have much other asset. We would like to do what the Shedders are doing, Michael and the Shedder. We like the Guy Luscombe Swiss example that he talked about. Our problem is We want to stay here.
We want to continue
our community here in Balmain, but we do want to sell our houses. We do want to downsize. We do want to move to something terribly clever, as Guy Luscombe has pointed out in his article, which I've read. You know, he's got his finger on everything that we want.
Yes, but
we want to stay here.
Yeah, but I mean, for those across Australia who aren't familiar with the suburb of Balmain over in Sydney, it's a very high-density peninsula with lots of little small houses tucked in together adjacent to each other. So you might need to make a compromise and move out.
Well, I'm just going to tell you my problem. At the point we're at, we don't want to move out.
Okay.
Because we have community here. We are still involved in the community. We still do a lot. We pay back a lot of our skills to the community. We know we're still incredibly useful. But there is a big parcel of land coming free near Balmain soon. You know, it would be an opportunity for what we're talking about to come to fruition here.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Helen. So good luck with maybe realising that potential. And I might just sneak Guy into the conversation quickly. How could they potentially realise that possibility if there is a big parcel of land coming up and they all go, oh, that's interesting?
Well, at the moment, I mean, I think the big parcel of land she's talking about is what's called the Bays Precinct, which sort of fits. Is sort of around White Bay and Rozelle Bay and all that sort of area. The government...
Which could be any city in Australia, the similar blots of land that come up.
But it's a huge amount of land. And the government, at the moment, the state government's asking for submissions about what could be done for that. And I think if people got together and enough people got together and put it together a submission to the government, they'd get a hearing. I'm being positive here. So that's one option. I think the other option is that the councils probably need to free up their planning regulations a little bit. And if for example, Helen and her friends, they could consolidate their land. Maybe, I don't know if they live next door to each other or whatever, but if they could somehow consolidate their land together, you know, there could be some way of developing a communal development on consolidated land. So
our council's receptive. We heard our farmer who had his local council express concerns about multiple occupancy.
Yeah. Well, the issue with the farming is that under the legislation at the moment, there's a state environmental planning policy for seniors, and it doesn't allow seniors developments on, seniors development on rural land.
Right.
And there's been a whole question mark about that. The SEP in many ways is very good because it allows for people to develop land in a particular way, especially for seniors. However, I think there are some issues with the SEP, but I think that needs to be freed up as well. I think the SEP has, I think it's a bit outdated now. It needs to move on to the next stage.
So, Michael Hollingworth, did you have any issues around councils and planning? Maybe not, because you were just building one house that all occupied.
No, I don't think we had any issues. First of all, we got a local designer to design the house and a local builder to build it. And so they shepherded it through the process. And I don't think the council would have the faintest idea how old we are. Sometimes we don't know how old we are ourselves. So I don't think that issue ever arose for us. But we did what people could do at any age, I think. But we had to. There are some regulations that vary from council to council. Guy would know a lot more about this than I do, about whether there have to be connections between the areas that are the dwelling places or whether they need to come under one roof. We decided to put it under one roof, so it was never a question, really. It was never an issue. It's a very big roof, I might add.
You're three couples. You've been long-time friends, holidaying together. Do you think that's what's been fundamental in helping you pull resources, build a house, live together, work through some of the challenges of making this new kind of share house work?
Look, absolutely. I mean, I was thinking while others were speaking that one of the big questions is, I think this is something that Guy was saying about the people in St Gallen, is being deeply engaged in actually creating it I think it's important, but I think it also adds an enormous amount to what you create together in terms of the architecture of your relationships and your ways of supporting each other and communicating.
Have there been tensions along the way or points of difference as you were trying to make it work?
I'm not trying to make my co-shed Heather rich, but she actually wrote a book about it, which sells on Amazon for the princely sum of $3.25. So if you want to...
What's it called?
Shedders.
The Shedders, okay. We'll put details on the Facebook page.
If you want to work your way through the moments of tension, yes, certainly there were. But we've also been committed for a long time, and before we took on this project, to dealing with those sorts of issues and tensions in business and personal relationships. And I don't know that we're good at it, but we never shy away from it.
Yeah, and the key is you're in control of the situation as a team. Michael Hollingworth is who you're hearing right now. He's one of the so-called shedders, three couples in New South Wales who decided to take retirement living into their hands and set up a share house, build it from scratch, make it work. They all live in it together. Yes, indeed. And that's what we're talking about today. How you want to live, where you want to live as you age. What is your dream scenario? What's stopping you from actually realising that possibility? 1300 22 55 76 or 1300 call RN. Massive full board of calls. Rosalind in New South Wales. Now, you're horrified by the idea of sharing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of anything worse.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I'm an introvert. I'm energised by solitude and nature.
And on that basis then, what would be your dream scenario for how and where you want to live as you age?
Oh, probably fairly well where I am. High on a ridge with views in two directions, mountains, open land, trees, and close to town.
Perfect.
Yes.
What about when you need more support?
Then I expect that it would appear from nowhere and my shopping would be done.
And now you're talking in the realm of fantasy, of course, but this
is... Well, it was a fantasy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was supposed to... Yeah, well, I would like certainly someone to do messages or take me to places when I wanted to, but not somebody to be popping in and being there unexpectedly and interrupting my dreams.
Yeah, Rosalind, thank you. You make an important point. Wendy writes on our Facebook page, a home of my own, on my own, a small plot of land to enjoy the good things of life with friends and acquaintances when I wish, without the intrusion of unwanted others. And of the retirement home option, Sue writes, my biggest concern is that I'll be listening to the same music that my father listened to. He was born in 1927, me in 1962. Don't give me war songs. Unless it was the Vietnam War or a war on the anti-environmentalists. That's her perspective. And, of course, we're talking about the new architecture for the new age. That's architect Guy Luscombe's expression. It's part of a report that he's written, which is launching today as we go to air, which explores different ways of living as we age. He's gone and travelled across Europe to look at some really hot options, and we'll come back with some more examples. Let's take a few more calls. Lorraine in Melbourne.
Hello.
Yes, good morning to you. What's your perspective here?
It's a bit of a negative one, only in the sense that for quite a lot of us baby boomers now, we're thrown on the work trash heap, scrap heap, so to speak, and we can't get paid work. So that's seriously going to affect our plans for retirement. And, you know, I'm 62 and I've got a doctorate. It's pretty tragic that I can't get work in, I'm counting passengers on train stations and counting train times in Melbourne.
Yeah. So where's that putting you in terms of what you were hoping for yourself?
Well, I suppose that myself particularly, I've worked in the community services sector as a social worker for a long time, and it's women's work, predominantly doesn't get well paid. Mm. So it's for someone like myself, whose salary is pretty low anyway, or was pretty low, it's nothing now, $9,000 I think I earned, counting counting passages on trains gross,
yeah.
For the year. It sets me back incredibly because... I didn't have a high salary anyway.
Yeah, so...
And you knock off, say, I don't know, 3 to 5 years, because I've been struggling for a few years now, that's significant when maybe, you know, some of your other, you know, costs like you know, financial burdens have slightly lifted, although doing a PhD did cost a lot of, you know, in terms of not having a salary.
Okay.
So, yeah, so it sets, if you've got a high salary, maybe it's not a big deal.
Yes. But I think you raise a vital point, Lorraine, and thank you for calling to make it, because a lot of us just think, well, where are we going to get the money from to have the sort of retirement living that we would fantasise about? And that is a vital challenge, Guy Luscombe. Mm. You know, some of the things you're talking about are people who have clearly had money, been able to attract investors, been able to build something from scratch, their fantasy realised. But most of us don't have that sort of money to do that, and many people will be renting well into retirement.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, especially before the super guarantee was brought in the late 80s, there is a real issue with affordability. I mean, the example in St. Gallen, the main reason those women did that was for affordability, but the other option that I thought was really interesting when I was overseas was an intergenerational community, again in Switzerland, near Zurich, and it was a community housing provider, and so they were providing affordability, affordable housing, but their philosophy, if you like, was to, they had a philosophy of community, where community wasn't about one age group or one social group, it was about mixing people together. So they specifically took tranches of people from different areas of life, young families, singles, couples, and older people, and they had 14 buildings on this particular site, and they had peppered the older people throughout the whole building, and they found that that actually created a very robust community where everyone looked after each other. Not only robust, it actually was much more easily structured, because the older people were around during the day, and when the other people went out to work, and so they did their washing and, you know, did that sort of stuff, and the other people could use the facilities, the washing facilities and laundries and stuff like that in the evening. So what it meant was it was almost restructuring this sort of pre-industrial idea of the way we lived, in that there was the extended family, but it was restructuring that kind of extended family into a sort of a situation.
Brilliant.
Sounds a bit, you know, it sounds like we wouldn't want to be forced into something like that, but these people, because firstly, it was an affordable thing. They subscribed to the community housing provider. They also agreed that they wanted to live in community. And the research they've done on that has shown to be extremely successful. Even though it has been a little bit forced, it still has created this great sense of community.
And it doesn't have to become a marginalised community.
No.
So this is about the government investing in good design.
Yeah.
Well, so that we may live well as we age.
Yeah, that's good planning and design. I mean, I think the regulations come under a kind of a planning kind of area, I suppose, in terms of how you would try and structure the sort of way we develop the areas that we're living in. Mm. The design aspect, tried to identify what it was that people most liked in facilities, and so I came up in the report, but you can read it later, we won't go into detail now, but I came up with these eight features. And
oh no, they're super. Yeah. I love the eight features. So let's just consider those really briefly, because I want to get to some calls. But let me just list them. Windows to the world, space grace, the great outdoors, small is beautiful, free to choose, belonging, integration, something to do. Now, what were those features? Why were they so crucial?
Well, it was based on a kind of I wanted to compare all these buildings together to see if there were common features. And so I prepared a kind of a checklist of things and then put it together in a spreadsheet and then sort of collated the comments together and came up with these eight features. And they were just, for example, Windows for the World, that was the top one, because that was the thing that people said, the most common comment that what people wanted was this idea of natural light and large windows and views and connecting the community. So it was not just the sense of having windows, but actually being connected to the community, but not being isolated from the community. So it was this sense that the windows were performing a function that was beyond just having glass and a window. They were actually creating some sort of function that gave people some sort of validation.
Connectivity.
Some kind of way.
What about space grace?
Space grace was about flexibility and adaptability of space and trying to make sure, and about circulation and access. And so, you know, a lot of facilities have these long corridors, for example, that some people call horridors, which I've written in the report.
Yeah.
And the idea here was to try and create sort of a use space creatively, so plan in an effective and an efficient way, but also being able to have enough space for people to be able to move around and to change things around if they needed to.
But key is free to choose, belonging, integration, something to do. These are the social dynamics of these spaces.
Yep. That's right.
Which are also allowing for solitude because, you know, Mara has written, I'd rather die than go into an aged care facility. Being forced to live with strangers would be hell. That's on Twitter.
It's not an unusual comment, I'd have to say. Most people don't go into an aged care facility unless they have to because they've been assessed to go into it. But that's not to say we couldn't actually improve the facilities for aged care. But yes, the idea of being free to choice. I mean, one of the interesting things I saw a dementia facility in Germany, in Nuremberg. And the architect for that, he thought the most important thing you can design for is freedom of choice, because he said that is part of our humanity. Even if you're high in dementia and you don't have much ability to sort of do much, to be able to choose between one chair and another chair, he thought was a really important thing, to have that control, because as we age, our choices are taken away from us. Mm. You know, we're not as fit as we were. Our eyesight's not as good. But if you maintain that freedom, then you maintain some dignity and power.
Let me come to Michael Hollingworth briefly on that point. So life changes. Your housemates range from ages 66 to 71.
72.
72. Someone just had a birthday by the sounds.
It was me. It was a few months ago.
So how are you thinking about then the next phase? If, for example, your needs become greater for input and care, is it about the five others of you giving support to each other, or what's the arrangement going to be?
Well, look, that's the first option, and we're aware that there's a bit of a design flaw in our do-it-yourself retirement village, because when the wheels start to fall off, we've got to figure out how to deal with that.
Yeah.
We do actually have space, and this has been, but nobody has a need, although all of us have, or several of us have had health issues to deal with, nobody has a need for this sort of support at the moment, but we have discussed the fact that there's room, and the property's about 4 acres, so it's bush and it's got all the views and even the odd mountain in the distance, but there's room to build facilities where support people could be if it came to that.
Yeah.
But I guess that the fact is that we need to deal with it, you know, bit by bit and as it comes up. One of the things I'd love to sort of acknowledge what Guy's saying is, because some of the things that he's bringing up, I think, are without question the most important issues. I think connecting to community is probably the biggest, and it means a whole lot of different things, not just the small community of us, but the many different communities that we've become part of. Something to do is really critical, and freedom of choice. And in a way, I think the thing that we love about this is, without thinking about it consciously all the time, is that we actually did choose to do it and did it the way that we worked out together. So that freedom of choice for us is a really strong component. I think what he's looking at is fantastic.
It is fantastic. And at 72, you run your own business as a business coach. Yeah. Others run yoga classes amongst your housemates, write blogs, physically active, kayaking, walking, very active in your community, garden groups, singing groups. You know, this is a busy retirement you've all created for yourselves.
Yeah, it's the best time. I think probably all of us would say it's the best time that of our lives, probably, in a sense.
Let's take some calls. Brendan in Wodonga, you are building a retirement village.
Yes, Natasha, bought the land about 10 years ago off the state government. It was a large central block of land, 5 acres of land in the middle of the Wodonga. And we built a medical centre first and set that up with a pharmacy and pathology, and then we're building units at the rear of it. So we've built 100 units to date of people freestanding, suitable for elderly people, and they own them. So I've been through the council thing that took a couple of years extra for people not to have body corporates over them, but I've been through all that. But it's worked really well. We're in the last phase of it now.
So what's your vision? Is it different from your usual retirement village?
Well, you own it yourself. You don't have fees and you live independently. There's a community garden in it, which is owned by the council. So it took a lot of negotiating with the council to get it over the line. But my vision was people didn't have options. You either went into a retirement village or you couldn't stay in your home if you're forced out. And I could just see there was an area not catered for there, and I was just interested in that. It gave a purpose to what I was doing. So
good stuff. Good luck with the project.
Okay, Natasha.
When does it open?
It's nearly finished, Natasha.
Nearly finished. Brendan in Wodonga, thank you.
Thank you.
Peter in Brisbane.
Yes.
Your aspirations?
Well, I would sum it up as looking for a pedestrian mixed generation in a city village type of environment.
Yeah.
And so much of what has been said is spot on. You know, things come to mind: gardening, pets, cycling, walking, people activity, and something to do. Being useful in a community. They're all things that have been reflected on. I was thinking also about, I think in the 80s there was a review of Australian cities I think the reflection was between pedestrian and automobile cities, and I think maybe it's timely to have a national review of Australian cities and major country towns in relation to ageing populations.
Yeah, wouldn't that be good?
Yeah, and those eight features are just excellent. A couple of other quick points. In Brisbane, I believe Southbank has been a great amenity to the population. I understand that was was born from an international design competition with a list of aspirations from the community, the Brisbane community, and it's developed, and the outcome was this lovely amenity. So maybe there's an opportunity to look at inner city development. So that put that out to world design best practice and really develop the infrastructure into the future.
Yes, don't just hand it straight to the property developers. Actually, build some vision into the process.
And another quick thing I'd also add is when you know in your 50s, I guess, heading towards let's just say the second half of your life.
Okay.
There's a lot of unknown. We don't know how we're going to be in 10, 20, 30 years' time.
Mm.
What are our needs? I don't know what my aspirations are going to be. I don't know what my abilities are going to be. I'm not even sure about what my resources are going to be and how those resources are going to service my needs. So there's a whole lot of, you know, those kind of unknowns are important considerations in terms of how I might see where I'll be.
Yes, that's a great point. Thank you very much, Peter. That is a great point because that, I think, is often a barrier to many of us thinking, well, let's just make something happen. We all talk about it over a glass of wine and then we don't actually think, well, this is ever going to be possible. I don't know how much money I'm going to have, etc. Glenn in Melbourne, you bought a big Edwardian house, and what did you do with it?
Well, 4.5 years ago, Natasha, and by the way, fantastic program. I was 65 4.5 years ago, and now I'm encroaching 70. And I bought this place. It's the most exquisite Edwardian I've seen in my life. It is got two bedrooms. You could easily make a third one. It's got open fireplaces everywhere, plus a Kunara, very fantastic facilities, plus attached to it but separate, but through a corridor but locked off with locked doors, there is three completely separate self-contained units. And I think it might actually interest people, if I could leave my number with your switch, that actually do want to do this shedding, but on a mini scale with a sort of philosophical camaraderie. But they're very constrained by money with rental prices and purchase prices. For example, this property, which it actually lawfully can take 12 people, for example, if it was an interest to a community party and 10 went in there, I mean, it's worth about $1.6 million in terms of its asset value. If you rented the whole lot, you get $80,000 plus rent. So it's well over 5% return for that. But the point is, I've been living there for this long. I've been running my business. It's time to move on. And this concept of yours is extremely timely.
Yes, it sounds like it is. Well, good luck with thinking through some options there rather than selling up, maybe, Glenn. Thank you for...
You there?
Yes.
It's actually 4 minutes walk to a train station, 10 minutes from Melbourne CBD. If I could leave my number, perhaps someone might be interested in the community.
You can. Stay on the line. Thanks, Glenn, very much. Now joining us, and this Peter in Brisbane raised this point about how we think about building age-friendly communities. And joining us on the line now is Hal Kendig. He's Professor of Ageing and Public Policy at the Australian National University, and oddly enough, he's co-authored a little while back a great report called Building Age-Friendly Communities. Good morning to you, Hal.
Good morning, Natasha.
So, now, what is an age-friendly community from your point of view?
Well, importantly, it's from the point of view of the World Health Organization, and even more importantly, from the viewpoint of older people themselves. And that is recognizing that how we age depends partly on our person, what we want, and so forth, but it depends very much on the environments in which we live. And that's a social environment, a work environment, and a built environment. So an age-friendly environment, firstly, it's a process. It builds from what people want. And so that there are movements around Australia, Canberra is one of the places, in other states as well, where you listen to older people about what they want, and you try to make sure the built environment provides that. Mm. And it's not very easy to do. It's quite a struggle.
It is a struggle. And is it something that Australian planners are looking at all?
It's starting to happen. And it's very difficult because the planning profession traditionally, and even more importantly, the power structures behind local property interests do not align very well with making good options available for aging people. We heard that in the case of Balmain. We heard that in other cases. So the big challenge ahead is to change some attitudes, recognize the value for the whole community, not just older people, and having more age-friendly environments. And it can be done, and it can be a win-win situation.
So just what are some of those power interests?
Well, one of the most difficult ones is to do with the NIMBY syndrome, not in my backyard. Mm. So that, in other words, I might want to have a medium-density development near where I live now so I can age in my neighborhood and in a more appropriate housing. But I don't necessarily want that new medium-density development right next to my existing home.
Yeah,
that's a real conflict and needs to be worked through with good design and with a balancing of interests. I'd say the interests now are set up so that it's very difficult to have the sensible infill development, lots of ways to do it well, and we have to push that.
You've got some great examples in this report you put together a few years ago with one of your colleagues about age-friendly cities and age-friendly city design. What are some of the specific elements that you included from around the world? I think Manchester was an interesting example.
Yes, Manchester is an outstanding example of how one can do better. And the important point about Manchester is that the age-friendly developments were heavily aimed toward lower-income people. So to provide appropriate low-income housing and to enable a whole variety of things. The most importantly, I'd say, is having a range of choices in a local environment. So you don't have to move away from your neighborhood or your community in order to get a more appropriate housing. That's probably the most important. Another is to have neighborhood community attitudes positively disposed toward recognizing these wonderful examples we heard from Guy and from Michael and from your callers in of how people are actively and proactively building their futures and their current lives as older people. And the fact is, and our research shows this, this is the reality. It's not the negative attitude toward aging. This is the reality, and we have to recognize that and enable it.
So what do you think would fundamentally ignite interest in government and property developments, property developers?
That's the key question.
Self-interest? Is that going to be what drives change?
Well, what kind of self-interest? I'd firstly say a collective interest. A collective interest by aging people themselves and other fair-minded people in the community who recognize the potential here. And we do have leadership in this area from our councils on the aging. If listeners want to get in touch with their state council on the aging, that's a way to join into a bigger issue. And so we need this interest, formation, collective action by the aging people themselves to a counterpointing other interests. For example, we put together a state aging plan in New South Wales a few years ago, and it made a lot of sense. It talked about infill development, etc. It didn't get very far because of the cross-portfolio conflicts between planning, housing, the other state departments, and of course local property interests and so forth. Mm. It's a tough question, but we have to tackle it.
It's a tough question. It's a vital question, and I thank you for joining us today as part of our discussion.
Thank you, Natasha.
Kel Kendig, Professor of Ageing and Public Policy at the Australian National University. And I'll include a link on our Facebook page to his Age Friendly Cities report. Let's take some more calls because, again, it's a full board. Pauline in Nambour, good morning to you. You're building a house to accommodate carers. What's the vision?
We are. We were ageing carers and our son was in his 30s and we wanted to ensure his life was going to continue to be enriched and ensured that his care would continue after we were not here.
He was also living with a disability.
Yes. Mm. Yes. Now, during the process of designing the house, He became ill and has not with us anymore.
Okay.
And we thought, do we still need this house? But also, we are all going to be disabled sooner or later.
Mm.
So anyway, the house for home share, we have in the house two little tiny apartments where people can be separate, but with the expectation that they will also share our lives. When we move there, which we would have wanted for our son, that people his age would have shared his life.
So, in fact, your son's, what you put in place for your son is now going to suit you. That's a wonderful outcome in some ways.
Well, it was
but a tragedy.
To suit us also. It was also for our transition out of this world as well. But
yeah.
He transitioned before us.
Yes. Mm. Pauline, thank you for sharing that story. Thank you very much. Erica in Tassie, are you living the dream?
I believe I am.
You lucky sod.
Yeah, I know. I retired 6 years ago. I'm 75 now. And when I retired, I sold my home. And my mother's cottage was on the property. And I've changed that completely to suit me. It's got big doors. It's got big bathroom, easy entry everywhere. So that if it ever comes to the fact that I need a wheelie frame or whatever, I'll still be able to get around. I've put a big veranda on. I'm sitting here, I just watched two black swans fly past, and I'm only half an hour from Hobart. But like all your other speakers have said, you've got to have something to do. You've got to keep the mind going. I've always said mind, body, soul, use it or lose it.
Yeah.
And I'm loving my life. I love it.
Erica, thanks for the call.
Okay.
I really want to squeeze in this text message from Sally. Natasha, all of the talk so far assumes that the elderly want to either live with other elderly people or alone. In reality, many elderly people prefer the company of younger people because interacting with young people keeps older people young. A model that would co-locate the young and old would offer savings to the elderly in the form of services contributed by the young, able-bodied workers, say nurses, chefs, cleaners, gardeners, in exchange for free or subsidised accommodation. And Kim in Avalon writes, it's very hard to currently find a retirement home that allows a couple to live together in the same room. Forget even mentioning the same bed if they are at different levels of care. We strip couples who have been together for 60 years of any dignity or intimacy. I don't believe baby boomers will tolerate this and applaud socialising alternatives. That is such a powerful point, and I cannot believe it, Guy Luscombe, that nursing homes don't allow people to live together on the whole.
Yeah. Now, I mean, that's for the most part true, but nursing homes are trying, because I've worked on quite a few, residential aged care, as people some people prefer to call it, they're trying to work out how to deal with couples, so making bigger rooms or making interconnecting doors. It does make it difficult because the often, you know, the average stay at a nursing home, especially these days, is not very long. So it has to be a feasible kind of option. It has to be flexible to allow for single use or double use. And I know most aged care providers are wrestling with that issue, but it's a very difficult one.
It is a difficult one. Joe in Brisbane.
Yes.
You've made allowances in your house.
Yeah, when I bought the place, I had an eye for possibility in the future of needing a wheelchair, etc. I've been offered 2 replacement knees, so I've got that in place. I can remove a couple of fences and gain easy access into the house. But I answered your response to the question of fantasy, etc. I've been married and divorced 3 times, and I really need a maid. Someone who'll do as she's told, when she's told, how she's told.
Well, if you pay her, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. I'm happy to give board and lodging and a small wage, but I'm hoping immigration department would come to the party with a 457 visa and let me bring someone in from overseas who could do it a little bit cheaper.
Well, there's another model for care. Thank you very much, Joe. Joy in Yass lives in an RSL life care unit. You love it.
I do. I really do. I'm looking out my double doors, big double doors in my dining room end of my lounge dining room kitchen area. It's huge. And I have 2 bedrooms and a bathroom and a laundry of my own, and I'm looking at the hills all around the Yass Valley.
Yes, you've got the window.
And I have Canberra 56 miles away where there are specialists and where there's so much entertainment. You know, the big names, it's not far to go. We have a council bus, which I'm 86. Mm. I've been here 8 years. And we have this council bus which takes our group shopping, picks us up at our doors, goes all around the village and picks us up one by one, takes us shopping, brings us back. We don't see our shopping until it's brought in by the disabled people under supervision and put on my kitchen bench. And it's just a wonderful town spiritually. We are involved in activities as little as we want or as much as we want, and there are many of them.
The perfect combination.
Wonderful music club. We had Yvonne Kenny singing here just a short while ago. You know, there's everything is so close. I don't have a car anymore. I don't need a car. In fact,
fantastic.
It would be a liability.
Joy, thank you for rounding off our discussion today, who is ageing and thriving at the RSL Life Care Unit there in Yass. Final comment from our guests, Michael Hollingworth. Is it full steam ahead for the shedders?
Oh, look, I think we're fine, yes. No, we're very happy with what we've created, and we get more and more involved and engaged in the community around here as life goes on. So I recommend it. I recognise that there are other barriers, but I think all of them can be overcome, possibly except money. I'm not sure that just how you deal with that when there's very, very little. So we shared our resources in order to make this possible.
Your superannuation.
Yeah, more or less. Our superannuation was our houses, really.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Look, congratulations. Thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. It's a great program.
Yeah. Guy Luscombe, to you, what one thing would you change in Australia after your European sojourn?
I think I would try and change the way we view ageing. I think we need to see ageing as a normal process of life, and we tend to view it as sort of a sequestered part of life and that it's something wrong with the aged person. So I try and change the view we have of aged people.
And so say all of us, because we are all ageing from the day we are born. So this is our issue. And if we want to change it, it's in our hands. Thank you very much, Guy Luscombe, for joining us.
My pleasure, Natasha.
Guy Luscombe, he is an architect. He's co-director of architects Johansson and Associates. And his report, the Nana Project, New Architecture for the New Aging, the New Aged, is launching today, and we'll put it on our website so you can read it right now. And I'll put it also on our Facebook page. In fact, they're launching it because of our program Going to Wear, so that's terrific, isn't it? Have a read, beautiful vision in it. Well, that's where we have to leave you, but Daniel Browning is taking your Friday onwards with books and arts, and you're taking us to the theatre.
I am indeed. A new Australian play, Natasha.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the lost love story between two Australian literary icons, and I might just keep it under my hat as to who they are.
Who they were.
Indeed.
Icons, so, though.
Icons, August, Bush balladeer, and a poet, two incredible people.
I love a love affair.
Me too.
Reclaimed. I love a literary love affair. Oh, good one.
They're so much better.
Exactly. Books. Yes, indeed. Coming up, and thanks for your company this week. And thanks to the team. Lindy Rain produced today's Talkback. Bye from me. 10 a.m.